You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a production of WVIK Quad Cities NPR.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and today my guest is the author of a new book that explores the political changes that have taken place in Nebraska, of course, a state that borders Iowa on the west. It's a very interesting topic that I think is relevant to Iowa in the sense that the question I had in the back of my mind reading through the book is, with the recent political changes in the landscape in Iowa, is Iowa going the way of Nebraska, perhaps? My guest today will answer that later in the show. But it's really a pleasure to have him on the show. This book stands on its own as a very interesting look at the changes going on in the urban-rural struggle and differences in our politics that are very well known and have become to the fore in the last 10 years especially. His name is Ross Benesch. He's the author of the book called Rural Rebellion, How Nebraska Became a Republican Stronghold. Ross, thanks a lot for coming on today.
It's good to be here.
Well, this is partly, a personal story of your life growing up in a small town in Nebraska. But partly, I think for somebody who hasn't been involved deeply in politics, it's a pretty astute look at some of the political changes that have been going on and some specific issues. So, I think listeners will find this book very interesting. But so you didn't really have any kind of deep political background. You had kind of been somewhat interested in it growing up and dabbled a little bit. But what really got you to the point of writing this book, which is not a typical topic for what you do as a writer?
Yeah, I mean, my first two books were about sex research, so this is a little bit of a departure from that. And I was looking to write a book about pro wrestling, and I've written about sports and all sorts of other topics as well. What made me want to do this book was following the election of Donald Trump to the presidency in 2016, out in New York City where I live now, I noticed there was a really elevated interest in rural areas and in the middle of the country. Whereas before, when those areas would get brought up in conversation, people didn't really care that much. It was just kind of brushed aside. And now, you know, if I mention being from Nebraska, for instance, it would invite this whole round of questioning of what that's like. And there was this genuine curiosity. And I saw most of the writing about that subject being done by people who didn't live there, you know, who may have only visited for a short while in order to do their little TV feature or their opinion article. And I wanted to do something much deeper and show how, these states aren't the way they are politically because of Trump. If anything, I'd say they were shifting to the right before him and helped enable him. And I wanted to show how I saw that throughout my life. So that's why the book's, you know, got a big memoir portion, because my experience with getting health care, my experience being raised in the Catholic Church, really gave me a firsthand look at how Nebraska, and I would say the region in general, just continue to shift further to the right over my lifetime.
Yeah, I'll just share with listeners. I mean, I straddle both worlds too. I was born and spent early years of my life in Chicago, not any adult years by any stretch of the imagination, but I've spent most of my life downstate here. But I do think that there's value in kind of looking at both sides of this to try to get some kind of common understanding. And I salute you for doing so in this book. It's interesting. I guess I give away my age. I can remember when Nebraska had Democrats elected to statewide offices. They weren't progressive or liberal, but they were more moderate. But things changed. What were some of the things that were happening in Nebraska that caused this shift to make it go from more of a, I'd say, moderate right state to a more hard right mm-hmm. state?
Well, I have the first chapter in the book about abortion, because I believe that's the issue that has been wedged the most in political races in Nebraska. Some of those Democrats you're talking about, like Ben Nelson or Jim Eggen, they were able to deviate from their party in a way that they could appeal to conservative voters in Nebraska, and that allowed them to get elected statewide. You know, Ben Nelson cast a lot of votes that would be considered favorable to the pro-life agenda. And I think you have to do that to get elected in Nebraska. It's just the reality. And as the parties became more dogmatic on that issue, with, you know, Republicans demanding everyone be, you know, pro-life on their platform, Democrats pro-choice, I believe that may help Democrats win in areas with larger urban blocks, but in states with very low population density and high rates of church attendance, like Nebraska, that issue became an albatross. And a lot of Democrats that I interviewed would agree with that. So that was definitely one of the issues. Another one was immigration and just seeing the Republican Party drift further to the right on that issue. And, you know, when Democrats became less competitive, winners began being decided in the Republican primary. And basically the candidate who went furthest to the right on immigration was the one who came out of that primary. And that's something that I really started to see around 2006. And then it just gained steam from there.
Yeah, the abortion issue, go back to that one first. I have a couple follow-up questions on each. There used to be a time, and again, I give away my age here, but I remember when each party had diverse opinions on this issue, where there were liberal Republicans who favored pro-choice positions and conservative Democrats who were pro-life, probably some of the folks from Nebraska. This has gotten to the point where it's almost like both parties, especially the Democrats, talk about having a big tent, but there's nothing of the sort, because if you're pro-life, your opinions don't seem welcome anymore.
No, I would agree with that. Whenever they, you know, talk about big tent, I kind of chuckle because they torched one of their own mayor candidates in Nebraska 4 years ago when a Catholic Democrat ran for mayor in Omaha, and national Democrats came down on him because he co-sponsored an ultrasound bill in the state legislature. And, you know, if it was a big tent, the DNC chair wouldn't have had to denounce a mayor candidate in the middle of the country for his past actions. But you really saw that the Democratic Party was dictated by, you know, abortion rights activists. And that, to me, creates a situation where there really isn't a big tent. You know, there's only a big tent when they're on the campaign and saying it. But in reality, it's hard to get a candidate who's going to violate their stance on that issue, because they'll be run into the ground if they try to go their own way.
And of course, that's tied to the issue of religion. And I thought you did a particularly outstanding job of talking about the role of religion and faith in small town rural America, and how it weaves throughout people's upbringings. Now, it's not, you know, I'm not going to be totally I guess defensive of it or whatever, because you also talk about how some Catholics would choose the Republican Party over their own faith. But talk a little bit about that, how in small town life, and a lot of our listeners are aware of this, that you know, that religion and your faith is woven into the fabric of how you live.
Oh yeah, you know, I talked about religion a lot in the book because it just had such a influence on me and all my friends. Because when you're in that small town, there's not a whole lot of institutions that are still running, but the church is one of them that is. And it's not just something you do on a Sunday. You know, there's events throughout the week. It's, you know, a community. You just come together there, whether it's to support your neighbors or some other cause that they have going on. The church gets people out of their house, and it brings them together, and it does a lot of genuine good for people out there. I think it also can teach them to live selflessly, but there's also definitely a downside to it, and there's a lot of politics being preached at the pulpit. And when that happens, I believe it really invades the way people think about these issues. And people aren't going to church, you know, to get their politics. They're going for many other reasons. But that's one of the things that they get while they're there. And I believe the churches became more politically involved during the 90s, and most of them leaned to the right, and that helped drag the state further to the right. Abortion is the main issue, but there are others. So I would just say, you know, when you see someone who's really influenced by their faith with their political views, you know, consider how much more effective political messaging is to them when it's coming from a source like a preacher who they are voluntarily spending their time with. You know, that's much different than having external groups hammer messages at you. So that's why I think the messaging in the church with politics has been so effective, really going back to Reagan.
And you mentioned too the condescension, the elitism of folks in the big cities. Then they read about these things about people out in the heartland, and then they want to. I think it makes it worse by then having the judgmental tones that you know, people out here are cling to their Bibles and their guns, so to speak, as former President Obama.
Oh, there's definitely this feeling of being looked down upon and resented, and that you know, the only type of depiction they're going to receive in pop culture is some sort of caricature. You know, when CNN comes to town once every millennium, they're going to go find the guy in army fatigues at the state fair and talk to him as if that represents everyone. You know, there's just a sense of distrust towards the coast. And, you know, they associate the Democratic Party with those areas, and it just all kind of bleeds together. And of course, you know, a lot of this perception they have of these outside areas is being driven by media sources selectively, you know, choosing the most ridiculous aspects of, you know, New York City or any other progressive area. You know, it's not driven by their experience with people who actually live there. It's, you know, what Fox News presents it as.
I thought you did a really good job of talking about your personal story of how your views evolved on healthcare based on your personal experience. And again, the disconnect between those who say they don't want any government and healthcare, but then those who find that government, you know, government's pervasive throughout healthcare. And I think that's an important story that you shared in this book.
Well, yeah. So my experience with healthcare is basically I've been sick a bunch of times, and I have these chronic diseases. They're rare diseases, and I have a large health expense count if I don't get good insurance. And before Obamacare, it would be easy for an insurance company to discriminate against me for my pre-existing conditions, and I'd have to pay, you know, much more in insurance premiums. And having to buy insurance so many times, because I've lived in three states in my adult life and I've had various employers and whatnot, has really made me appreciative of how government tweaking the healthcare system can benefit people in my position. So I'm no longer discriminated against, and I can live a life more full and be able to achieve things that I want to achieve. But when I was in Brainerd and I was healthy, I didn't have that perception. To me, someone talking about overhauling the healthcare system was just, oh, that's just big government, you know, sticking its nose where it doesn't belong. But now I see it much differently, having had to go through the system the way I did. And, you know, those life experiences, it's things like that that have moved me to become more liberal as I've aged. It's not just that I moved to New York City. It's you know, these types of life experiences that made me rethink the way I viewed things when I was a kid.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is author Ross Benesch, which is spelled B-E-N-E-S, if you're interested in this book. We're talking about his book. It's called Rural Rebellion, How Nebraska Became a Republican Stronghold. Very interesting take based on his own experiences as somebody who grew up in a town of 300 in rural Nebraska and now lives in New York City, and the difference in trying to be somebody that's kind of mediating this to some degree and talking with both sides to get more common understanding, which is definitely what we need. Other authors have pointed this out, and I think you do as well in this book, that there just seems to be a mentality too, and it's not always incorrect, but the work ethic in these working class areas, rural areas, it's built on working, the work ethic, and life revolves around work, independence, And that way, when government programs come along, there's a hesitance to take advantage of them. And there's also the feeling that others are criticism that government is giving benefits to people that don't deserve them. This seems like another tough issue to draw some kind of middle ground on.
It is tough. People can, be too proud to receive the assistance or don't even want the assistance because there's this individuality, personal liberty point of view that they take very seriously. It's just how, living in a small area really creates a much different perception of what role government should have in people's lives. And when you're out there, out on your own, and you're isolated, people are loath to accept what they view as handouts, and I believe that's part of the reason why so many liberal policies have unfavorable views in rural areas, is because, a government issued mandate is almost by default unpopular in those areas, like a Green New Deal, for instance, to curb environmental pollution. In those rural areas, they're going to say, well, we don't, have a pollution problem. That's a problem for other people, even if they are affected by climate change. They don't want government coming in at all, even if it could benefit them. So it's a huge problem. I think we're seeing it this year, how it's a big problem when government rules around masks and other COVID prevention measures have been resisted so hard. When you're in a terrible situation like the country has been for the last year, I believe that's when you see the greatest need for strong government. But that's a tough sell with rural Nebraska, I tell you.
So Thomas Frank wrote a book years ago called What's the Matter with Kansas, which one of its major theses was the fact that he said working class voters don't vote for their own interests. You address that in this book. Do these folks out here in rural areas vote their interests when they vote Republican?
Well, yeah, I would say they are voting in their interests. It's just that their interests are much different than what mine are or what most progressive observers would say. A lot of times when someone says that person's voting against their own interests, what they mean is that that person is voting against what I believe their interests should be. But clearly rural Nebraskans have different interests than people out in New York City. We can mock them for clinging to abortion and guns, but that's of genuine interest to them. And Republicans have just done a great job of activating those issues and using fear to drive out voters on those issues. So, I try to not be patronizing. That's something I tried to do in this book, is to empathize with the people I grew up with, like with my family members and with my friends whose views on many issues I disagree with, but to see that they're coming from a much different point of view, and from their perspective, it doesn't seem so illogical. And I think when we beat them down and, tell them that they're stupid for having this viewpoint on it, that just drives them further away and makes them less likely to engage or, possibly reconsider their views.
Yeah, I cringe when I hear people say that. I just, sometimes people's economic interests are important, but they're not the preeminent interests that guide them. It could be faith related. And I agree with your take on that. I'm curious, you mentioned that Omaha mayor's race, and I remember that, and it was just a self-inflicted wound there over the abortion issue with the Democratic candidate. But what do the Democrats have to do? I mean, is this hopeless? Can they ever compete in a state like Nebraska? I mean, the Democratic brand is just just awful. People turn away from it, what they view the Democratic Party as. I mean, how are they going to be able to come back, if ever?
They need to find a way to make politics less nationalized. And by nationalized, what happens across the country in some other states shouldn't determine the news in Nebraska that day. you know, people's viewpoints of candidates now is so tethered to which national party they belong to. What, you know, and then part of that is because there's been this increased, I don't know what word I would use, but the Democrats and same with Republicans, they've become so similar across the country. A Democrat in Nebraska isn't running on any different issues than a Democrat in New York. And same with Republicans. The state party's platforms used to be different. Like, if you would read the party platform for Nebraska and you read one for California or New York or Iowa, they would all be different. Now they're like all basically the same. They're like carbon copies. There's this author, political scientist, who says that just as an Egg McMuffin is the same at every McDonald's in the United States, basically you get the same political parties no matter which state you go to. And that has been terrible for Democrats in rural areas. And they need to find a way to change that. And I'm not sure exactly how you go about doing that, because the problem has so many variables. I mean, social media contributes to it. You know, national media sources contribute to it. Campaign finance deregulation contributes to it, because an increasing share of out-of-state funds determine races today compared to what they used to. So as long as the parties are so nationalized, I don't know what Democrats can honestly do to win over rural Americans, because the National Democratic Party has a toxic brand in rural America, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
And the cookie cutter campaigns, which you mentioned, which is very astute, from somebody who's not a political insider, I think that's a fair assessment of the Democratic campaign apparatus as well. I go back to an interesting you did a chapter on the Cornhusker kickback, which I remember was key to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it. And the protagonist in that battle was, of course, former Senator Ben Nelson, who was also governor, very moderate to conservative. Is there a place in the party now for a Ben Nelson? I mean, I look at what's going on with Joe Manchin in West Virginia, he's the only type of profile that can win that state for Democrats, but yet he's under attack from the left constantly.
I don't think there is a place right now. That's why Democrats are just as dogmatic as Republicans are. And I don't know if they realize how dogmatic they are. You know, out here in New York, I've heard my friends complain about Joe Manchin, and I have to remind them he doesn't represent us. You know, he's representing West Virginia, and the replacement for Joe Manchin isn't some progressive person. He's not AOC isn't going to replace him. If he leaves office, he's going to be replaced by a far-right Republican, just like Ben Nelson was. Ben Nelson used to have to deal with that same stuff, too. The progressive commentators would always complain about how he would go, you know, on both sides in either way and this and that, and he was an annoying Democrat. But the replacement for him wasn't someone, you know, more progressive. It's going to be a Republican. Joe Manchin is the most progressive representation you're going to get out of West Virginia in a statewide election. And, you know, all the people who he's angering aren't his constituents. But Democratic Party demands purity, so I don't think there's a great place for him in the future.
So I lead up to the final question. I want to give you ample time here. We got about probably 3 or 4 minutes, but I look at what's happened in Nebraska, and while there's some differences between Nebraska and Iowa, there are quite a few similarities, the rural character and all. Do you think that Iowa could be headed that way in its future? It seems to be based on the last several election cycles.
It could be headed that way. I don't know. I don't think it'll be quite as far right as Nebraska. But, you know, I was looking at data the other day, and the Iowa state houses seem to have taken a rightward turn around 2017. Still not as conservative as Nebraska legislature, but not as progressive as they once were. And, you know, when I look at statewide elections, you know, like it seems very difficult for Iowa Democrat to win governor or Senate seat, you know, and that used to not be the case. Mm-hmm. So I do see similarities. It's kind of like Iowa is like 10 years behind Nebraska in this case. And by behind, I mean we shifted to the right, you know, more drastically and harder than Iowa did. But recent elections kind of seem like you guys might be taking our course.
I'm going to squeeze one more in here. I want you to offer your opinion on this. As I think about this and what you've written, is Nebraska's changes and to some degree Iowa's, is it more because the Republicans have done a better job of matching up their issues, their brand with voters? Or is this more a problem that the Democrats have just moved away and don't understand rural voters anymore?
I think the Republicans have done a better job, and they've invested more in those areas. Like, if you just look at campaign finance data in Nebraska, the Democrats are getting significantly outspent in rural Nebraska. So if you're in those areas, you're not getting a lot of Democratic messaging. And in your community, you're not getting it anyways from your church or the coffee shop or from talk radio. But then when you add on that the Republican opponent's probably going to spend three times as much as the Democrat, it's just a real big uphill battle for them, you know, even if they find a good candidate. So Republicans have made that like their target voter, you know, old rural white people. And it's paid off for them, because even though they have a declining share of the U.S. population, they still are able to hold a lot of power by locking in that block.
And until the Democrats can figure it out, they're going to have a tough time getting majorities in many of these states and in the U.S. Senate and perhaps even the Electoral College.
Well, yeah, you needed someone like Ben Nelson to override the filibuster to get the Affordable Care Act passed. But, you know, Democrats aren't close to 60 votes right now in the Senate.
Well, it's a really good book. And again, I compliment you, because you're not a political insider, but I think you've had a lot of good insights that people on the inside need to be aware of. And the fact that you've come from rural Nebraska, live in New York City, you've seen both sides of this. And I think it's a really timely book, and I recommend it to our listeners. Again, it's called Rural Rebellion, How Nebraska Became a Republican Stronghold. And I think it'd be of interest to all listeners, but especially those in Iowa, Democrats, to see what may be coming here in Iowa. Ross Benesch has been our guest. He's the author of the book. And Ross, I want to thank you very much. And I hope you take your talents back into the political arena and write again about this topic.
Oh, thank you, Robin.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at WVIK.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.